sweet honey in the rock with In the Morning When I Rise. It's from their 20th anniversary album, Still on the Journey. It was released in 1993. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to talk about history today. Today, as you know, brings to a close the official commemoration of Black History Month or African History Month or African American History Month, both in the United States and in Canada. The United Kingdom will celebrate its version of Black History Month in October. But the commemoration basically ends today. The official commemoration ends today. So what happens tomorrow and beyond? We have had a rather complicated relationship with this holiday. I submit it's perhaps one of our most misunderstood commemorations, because people have very different interpretations of Black History Month, what it's for, and what are you supposed to do. But I think we should at least do a piece of homework before we leave the official commemoration behind. And the first thing to do is to not leave it behind. Nor is it to be relegated to Black folks. I think the whole country, the whole world, needs to understand and appreciate the histories and cultures of all other people, especially those who have played a most remarkable role in the evolution of what we would call the national culture. In that vein, for example, I would maintain that we don't know enough of native culture. We don't know enough of oppressed people in this world. We don't know enough of the circumstances that caused their oppression, the kind of oppression that they suffered, and why. The consequences of such oppression. We don't know these things. And I think as a concession, as a way of placating, whether they're consciences or placating the desires of people wanting to know more, the idea came up of declaring February the shortest month of the year, declaring it Black History Month. But then what does that mean? We've just come through it. What is it? What is supposed to happen in Black History Month? And are we doing it? Whatever it is, it's supposed to happen. I'm saying this as a way to encourage us to not repeat, not even next year, the same kind of blasé attitude about it. But first we have to reconcile with ourselves whether we have had a genuine interest in Black history to begin with. And again, this is not just Black folks. I am Black, and I'm required to know American history. That means the history of the white people in this country. In fact, when I was evaluated, when I had just arrived in the United States, I was sentenced. I was sentenced to study Black history. They could find no other impediment to my going to school and getting on with college because I was 14. So they invented this rationale that I was way too young to start college. So my deficit was that I did not know American history, although the record did show that I knew at least as much or more than the person quizzing me. I had the answers, she did not. It was a way to retard my progress. I understood that. Didn't like it, but I understood it. So I want us to have a conversation about making Black History Month something personal and something essential to day-to-day functioning, especially if you come from a class of people who have reason to be thoroughly familiar with how you come to be in this world and how you come to be whatever it is that we've come to be in this world. That is not a ceremonial thing. It is a vital thing to inculcate a consciousness, to deliberately seek this information out, to see the pieces of the puzzle that have created a world that we had very little choice in creating for ourselves. And again, I am directly challenging white people and people other than Black folks and Latinos and oppressed people to understand how vital it is that we all make an effort to understand each other's histories. What Black history has come to be is largely ceremonial. Feel-good history. And people concocting and recreating false narratives about their own history in order to feel good. I complain all the time, as you know, that we're not using our resources enough or efficiently enough to fill in the yawning gaps of our history and the yawning gaps in our knowledge of ourselves. We're not going to the libraries. We're not reading books. We're not looking at the broad view. Our knowledge of our history is the narrative of slavery. That couldn't possibly suffice as a history. That all we have ever been slaves. And it should not be our constant point of reference either. We have to strategically locate ourselves in the way we naturally were. The designers of our own universe. The lives that we have led, the knowledge that we accumulated and shared with the world, the things that we accomplished. It is not about thumping your chest to make yourself feel good, because there are some really nasty aspects of our history as well. Blacks who sold and traded other blacks into slavery. The warfare, the corruption, and the price we have paid for colluding with oppressors. This too is part of our history. But if all we get to know or to appreciate during Black History Month is that restaurants feature collard greens and on their menu, and we get to familiarize ourselves with the standard parade of great blacks. This is not to say we should not recognize the value that they brought to our collective experience. But history is a very dynamic thing, a very dynamic process. And I'm making the case today that we have gone far enough down the road of trivializing our own history, and it's time that we stop it. More than time that it stopped. People doing things that are quite embarrassing and saying this is about Black history. No, it's not. That is not Black history. That is not even Black culture. And so many times, you know, I find myself getting very angry during Black History Month, because we are participating so willingly, so eagerly in the trivialization of our culture and our history. And it really burns me up. I ask people just routinely during Black History Month, so what's your last book that you read? And you see the face, the emptiness that occupies the face and the voice. People put down on paper, they've sacrificed their entire lives to give us pointers and on the way to go. The things that we should strongly consider and implement to our advantage. The problems they wrestled with. Because we have to accept it as part of what it means to be an oppressed people, wrestling with this idea of how best to achieve our freedom on all these different levels. So we have to redefine what it means. And I don't want next year to come, and again, for Black History Month, on television, they're teaching you how to make cornbread. And it's a nice little segment, and we all are happy, and we go back to being ignorant all over again. I want us to commit to really understanding the importance of knowing history, knowing your history. And in an active way, in a deliberate, active way, you immerse yourself in your history, because your life will depend on it. Now, that is not an exaggeration. That is true. If you have no strong anchoring points, you can be messed with in any number of ways, and we've seen it happen. We've seen it happen, and it continues to happen because, along with the idea of trivializing our history, that is to say, our culture, there is the tandem thought or process of thinking that there's no consequence to distorting history. There's no consequence to marginalizing a group of people. No consequence at all. Because, in fact, the people don't act like they're marginalized or that they understand themselves to be marginalized. It's Black History Month. So we occasionally attend a lecture, and that's enough. No further action required. I find over the years I become more and more annoyed with Black History Month, because so many people have signed on to the process of self-annihilation through the marginalization of our history and even our desire to know it. You know, when I was in college, I had a job at a bank. It was then called the New York Bank for Savings. And the main office, the head office, was at Rockefeller Center. And I was carrying 21 credits, and I needed a job. I needed any kind of job. So I trained, supposedly. I trained, I reported in order to inculcate an interest in this job. Okay, I passed it with flying colors. And because it was 100%, they thought I made the perfect person, one of the perfect candidates to serve the public at its Rockefeller Center office. To me, it's just a job, a big $74 a week. But they still had that racist view that they were doing me a grand favor of not only giving me a job, but giving me a job at their cherished headquarters. So time passed a bit, and I put in an application to be transferred. And they were shocked. Where do you want to go? I said, I want to go to Harlem. Harlem? Yeah. I can't wait to get there. So please approve my application, and I'm out of here. Well, eventually they did. What was the reason? The reason was, I love being in my community. I love my people. I love the whole experience of it. I love the culture. I love the interaction with it. And to me, there was no better place in the world to work. I couldn't wait. And more than anything else, the bank branch in Harlem was right across the street from the Schomburg Library. I mean, what luck! At break time, I'm in the library. It's right across the street. At lunchtime, I'm in the library. after work, I'm in the library. I was so thrilled. And guess what I discovered? The attitude in that branch was just so repulsive. They didn't treat their customers well. They didn't treat customers as though they cherished them. They wouldn't even say good morning and thank you, we see you again soon, or anything like that. I remember the day a customer came. This was when everybody had their own individual line, and he was clearly well into Parkinson's disease. It had been at a stage where it was just so obvious, and he needed a bunch of money orders. And he also seemed so uncomfortable, like he was a nuisance, you know. And I said, no, I'll take care of this. I asked him for the names of the payees and so forth. I typed it up so he didn't have to write it. All he had to do was sign each individual money order. I came back with everything done, and he's standing there and crying. Crying. And my heart sank. I had no idea what to do. How do I respond? I said, are you okay? He said, for all the years I have been with this bank, nobody has ever done this for me. It was such a simple thing to do. But we were so inoculated against each other. We refused to even acknowledge the beauty of each other. We treated each other like dogs. And then it came to the point where I was too popular. And I'm not saying this, you know, to pat myself on the shoulder or anything. The people sensed a definitive difference in the way I treated them as opposed to the way all the other people treated them who worked at the bank. Because I became so popular, I was overworked. In the morning before the bank even opened up, there would be people, a long line of people with their transactions in their bank book, because the bank was across the street from Harlem Hospital. They would put their transactions together and hand me their envelopes before I even could get into the bank. I had a manager who resented the idea that on my breaks I would be reading and I would be in the Schomburg Library. Resented it. I'm saying all this as part of the whole recognition of what Black history is supposed to do for us. It's supposed to humanize us and rehumanize us. It's supposed to give us the added edge, since we've been deprived of our knowledge of ourselves for so long. Now you can find it. And now that you found it, use it to your best advantage. But of course, part of oppression is the disembowelment of self. You're disemboweled. You hate yourself. You hate your people. You're indifferent to their suffering. And you're totally oblivious to any suggestion or any idea that one of your obligations is to help, turn things around. So I don't, as a rule, I don't get around much during Black History Month at all. Because people resent when you say these things. They resent the idea that they feel that they're being chastised. And in a way, I could understand that. But you see, we have so many years to show how meaningless we ourselves have made Black history become. Now, Black History Month didn't just start the other day. Actually, you know, it started officially in 1976. But when you look at it, it goes back to 1915, around there. This is more than half a century after the 13th Amendment was passed, abolishing slavery in the United States. Now, that would have been, in my view, a kind of breakthrough moment. And your whole house would be flooded with books and information about your history. Not so. We see in this last month here, in the current month, today's the last day of it, the big Black History Month coup was a release of the Black Panther. Somebody has gone out in a big way to make the statement that this is a huge fictionalization of your very existence. And Black folks so far have plunked down almost $1 billion. In the annihilation of their own history and the trivialization of their history and of themselves. It was such a depressing statement. And now people are talking about the beauty of the cinematography, and the designer is talking about drawing from African clothing, as if there's only one kind of African clothing. And, you know, we have become useless in this process of passing on our knowledge, becoming conversant, first of all, with it, and then doing everything we can to preserve it, to save it, and to inform the ensuing generations about the big questions that we seek answers for. Who are we? Where did we come from? So, I'm making this plea today. I don't expect it's going to change the world. But what I want to do is really to impress on many of you, as many as possible, that we really have to retrieve this concept of Black history and protect it. We have to fight for it. Because our very essence is being annihilated, and we seem not to care, or we seem not to even know. We should make a very strong effort to read, to educate ourselves, because that is one of our jobs. Not everybody in our community would know what our history is. We can't expect that. But we are supposed to know what our history is. You know, in the Jewish faith, when a boy becomes a man, makes that transition, he is prepared to be familiar with his history. And then he makes public a promise and a pronouncement to all assembled that he understands his duty to preserve his culture, his history, and to pass it on. That is his duty. That's not an incidental thing. In the 1920s, people took Black history seriously. Even before, you know, people got into this idea of a Black History Month, they had a Black history life every day. And when we look at the ways in which, in all these facets of life, they incorporated their understanding of their history, of their culture, even in the way the foods that they made and the spirituality in our community, all was so life-affirming. In every way, the spirit is uplifted because you get a piece of yourself over here, you get a piece of yourself over there, you go to church, you get a piece of yourself over here. And it is all about seeing to our collective progress, deeply immersed in our culture and in our knowledge of ourselves. They didn't require PhDs to do that. There was no specialized training in order to do that. But it was intimately understood that these approaches were directly linked to our survival individually and collectively. So let us not trivialize Black history and Black History Month. In fact, let's extend the concept of Black History Month to make it Black History Life. We can't afford to put down the books. We can't afford to take a breather from learning. We can't afford to put our history on the shelf. We have to continue in the manner prescribed. People who knew well what we were facing came up with all kinds of ways to help us avoid the suffering, to avoid social and political and economic evisceration. These things are not to be referenced only during the month of February in a cursory way. We have to revive a respect, a deep and abiding respect for the lessons that we are being taught if only we stopped to listen and if only we respected these works enough to just listen and to implement them. but to make history a living, breathing thing in our lives. Because we're not equipped even to write our present. We're not equipped to do it. In some cases, we have no interest in it. We could care less. And it is up to us, I think, to save the concept, not just, you know, Black History Month, but to save the whole idea behind it, which is to give us a solid anchoring to tell us which way is the best way to go. You know, the song I shared with you today, In the Morning When I Rise, I mean, even the song says, what is going to be your plan? How are you going to implement your plan tomorrow, in the morning when you rise? Where is your strength going to come from to do what you have to do to survive and to help your people survive? I mean, it's like a song, but it isn't just a song. It's a warning. It's an affirmation. We have to be purposeful in what we do. So as the song says, in the morning when you rise, where are you getting your strength from? What are you going to do to push this struggle further along? And it ain't about you. It's just not about you. So we'll take this break and come back to you and your thoughts about Black History Month. And I'm not trying to encourage any condemnation of it. I'm trying to encourage an affirmation, a commitment by each of us in the spirit of Black History Month to do our part, not just for ourselves, but for our entire community, to do our part. And lest anybody believe that this is just about Black folks, it isn't. The beauty of Black struggle is that it always has had a universal view, because it has been a struggle against the evils of the world. And so the thinking is, of course, we have to address the immediate situation, but you can see the immediate application. And it's all about being good. It's all about creating good and justice. And that is everybody's responsibility. So we'll take a break. You can call in at 888-874-4888 and we continue the conversation then, right after this.
She's a sweet, sweet, tender man, love it.
PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking as we close out what officially is designated as Black History Month. We want to do some thinking so that a number of disturbing trends are not repeated ever again, certainly not even for the next Black History Month, but that we reconfigure our understanding of Black History Month and we reshape our attitudes, not just about the month itself, but what is the relationship between Black History Month and ourselves? And we should pay attention to that, because there is a dramatic evidence, I think, that we're falling off the track here. And it's because we're not paying attention to what this month is supposed to be for and what it is supposed to do in our lives. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's have a chat about it. Let's not have this month go by without us getting into a serious discussion about how we ourselves trivialize Black History Month. And we do not make it relevant to our lives every month. And this is a major, I think, we deny ourselves so much by going along with the popular view that Black History Month is largely ceremonial. It's innocuous. There's nothing to fear about it, when Black History Month should be about a reckoning every year about where we are and what still needs to be done. 888-874-4888. I hope I have not offended anybody, but it's my view, and we are accustomed to sharing our views here. I'm looking to hear from you about what you think. Okay. Am I seeing anybody? Okay. I don't see anybody here. But this is a good time to remind you that on March 11th, Sunday, March the 11th, I will be speaking at the Community Church of New York, that is at 40 East 35th Street off Park Avenue at 1:30 p.m. Apart from speaking, I really just want to engage in massive hugging and handshaking. I haven't seen so many of you for so long, and it would be a great time to physically get together in one place and share the energy. So many of you have been so encouraging over the years, and it's a good time to get together and to talk. Let me see here. So I'm going to repeat. It's Sunday, March 11 at 1:30 p.m. at the Community Church of New York. It's quite a historic church. 40 East 35th Street, and that's off Park Avenue. So I'm looking for calls. I don't see anything on my... Let's see. I don't see anything on my... Well, you know, I'm struggling with this computer debacle that I have. I have four computers, and not one of them is working the way it ought to. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. I hope you're having a good day.
Yes, I'm trying. How about you?
I'm trying also.
Well, that's good.
You know? So, yeah, you know what got me thinking with this Black Panther movie? was two things I wanted to mention about Black History Month. This Black Panther movie got me thinking about the Party for Self Defense. And actually, these two things are related, right? So the Party of Self Defense, and when they saw their systems were not working, you know, the systems around them, they did what they had to do to survive. You know, they commandeered doctors and lawyers and nutritional programs. And I think people forget about, well, some people do. People who really don't know the history forget about that. And to me, it looks like we better kind of get together to start doing that again. And a lot of times I think that's what you're intimating when you talk about the failure of systems. Because from what I've seen, now I was little, but I was old enough to see some things, and then I read. And, you know, they were not unsuccessful, as far as I could tell. You know, with getting children fed and dental and making sure that their kids were learning when they figured out that the schools were failing them. So, you know, we've not really progressed that much since the mid-60s. We've moved backwards quickly, I would say, in terms of most of the Black community. And now almost everybody's
community. Why do you think that is? Why do you say that?
Why? Well, where do I start? Let's see. The economy is not nearly as good as it's made out to be, because this is a $10 an hour economy. Okay. And you see, because when Reagan came in and he started to denounce the unions, you see, we were told that we had to compete with the rest of the world and that we needed to work harder and we need to make concessions, but it would come back to us. And that was the beginning of cutting programs that help people. So every year, more cuts, and there's really nothing left to cut. And at the same time, real wages have not risen.
I was really asking in the sense of I latched on to your sense of loss within our community because of something. What was that something that triggered over time such a loss?
Well, it could have been integration, in that it's not a bad thing, but the separate but equal didn't really work out. And what has happened now, we are all self-selected again, so that it's very easy to divert funds here and there. You know, so the system is really, you know, it's rigged. I mean, it's really rigged.
I see where you're going with this, and I'm going to add my two cents, if I may.
Sure.
And based on what you're saying, I mean, you're recognizing it and you're naming it, but in a large sense, the specifics seem to be that we've suffered a great loss in many, many ways, because we have not kept faith with ourselves and our history. We really haven't.
Okay.
And it's not about blaming us or blaming anybody. It's just the way things are going. But when things go this way at the rapid pace that they've been going, we don't stop to take the pulse of what's going on. We don't stop to recognize what is happening. The Black Panthers that you pointed to in their programs, they were warmly embraced in communities that were extremely distressed. But at the same time, they were not universally embraced, because we had class differences within our community.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who were being served appreciated them. Our community instead engaged in a kind of class and, believe it or not, race warfare. To say, well, who are these people? What a crazy set of ideas they have. We can't support that. And it's for no other reason than there was a kind of shame, a sense of shame about it, embarrassment about it.
You know, you're absolutely right. No, you see, and a lot of folks who are not in the black, so don't understand the black community. Okay. They're, and I've mentioned the African diaspora and the Caribbean mentality as opposed to Native American, Black American mentality and the culture and that, and what happens there. I've touched on that with you, and you know what I said about that. And I think you agreed. You didn't say so, but I think.
Yes. This is a time for us to do something to revisit these, to see where we went wrong. Despite the fact that we had history on our side, we went wrong. And we need to revisit these things and make a commitment never to repeat them again.
And you know what? I would think, you know, it reminds me of the history. The first time, I believe it was the first time the United States Army ever bombed Americans was during the Tulsa uprising.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And it makes me feel like, in one sense, no matter what we do, you can't, you know, you succeed and then folks resent it. You don't have any money because people won't hire you and they resent it. Then we had the risk within our own community because, you know, you have the educated class, and then sometimes they look down on the working folk, you know, within our community. And that's what I think you were intimating with the party of self-defense. And you're right. I remember that. You know, I remember that. Right. And so then people would often say that. They would look down on those folks. Like, why are you?
This is a time I'm saying that we ought to spend some time with these contradictions within our own communities and try to figure out how best to utilize the great asset we have, which is Black history, to teach us things and to make our lives a lot better and more productive. Thanks for your call. I enjoyed talking with you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been having a little trouble getting on the phone, so I just got through. And I heard your question about the meaning of what we call Black History Month. And for me, it makes me think about the time I spent in the public schools here, from the kindergarten to the high school. I never had even one teacher that looked like me. And I didn't learn anything that was positive about people who look like me, from that level up to through high school and really through college. So Black History is Black History Month. It does something in terms of bringing to light some of these, as Dr. Clark or Dr. Ben would say, the hidden pages of history. And I didn't really start learning anything about so-called Black history until I was adult. Everything was hidden. There were no positive statements ever made about anyone that looked like me. So I think it's important to get beyond the point, as happens now, as where that is some kind of cultural thing, like some dancing or some singing and so forth. and enlighten people to what some of the real history was. I think one of the things that confuses people is that you see people that look like you in high places, but that has not really changed the system of white supremacy that is still in effect in the country. So even though you have somebody sitting in the Oval Office or somebody that is in the Congress and whatnot, they have just joined into the system of white supremacy that still exists. So just the fact of having a few people who have been able to get jobs and join with the system in effect, that does not change anything for the masses of people. And I think
thank you for your call. And we have to leave it there because we are out of time. But here's what I would do, because there's so many people in queue who want to have a say on this question. So we'll continue it tomorrow. And here you
join us at Community Church.
All right. So thanks so much. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. And we will be back tomorrow continuing the conversation. Thanks so much.